So we've been focused on the first half of Hilchos Tefilas Kelim, figuring out which Kelim are Chayavim and which are not. And that was primarily the middle of the Siman. Se'ifim Dalet through Yud Aleph. And there we were focused predominantly on two of the Tanaim the Gemara mentioned, the Tanai of Klei Suda, the function of the Kli, and the Tanai of Lekuchim and Ha'akam, the ownership history of the Kli. Let's come back to Sif Aleph. Sif Aleph, as the Shulchan Aruch often does, he sort of lays out some of the sodas up front. Sif Aleph is going to already contain within it the kernels of both halves of Hilchos Tefilas Kelim, the dinim of the tefillah that we'll begin beyond today, and also a praises of these dinim of tanaim, and this will be an opportunity for us to sort of fill out the dinim of the tanaim achiyum. Here's Sif Simen Chuvchav, Sif Aleph, Hakona Meha Akum, Shulchan Aruch writes, Klei Suda Shal Mateches, Shal Matchas, or Shal Zechuches. Yeah, you buy from an Achri, Klei Suda Shal Matchas, or Shal Zechuches. That already captures all three conditions at once, very, very efficiently. That the function has to be Klei Suda. The history that you were Kona from an Achri, it used to belong to an Achri, and now belongs to Yisrael. And the third condition, which is the Shal Matchas O Shal Zechuchas. Shal Matchas O Shal Zechuchas. He goes on to talk about the dinim of the Tzvil that Mishnah will get to going forward. Now, as we saw, so the Gemara says that the Matachas is Kamaisa Shahaya, and then the Gemara says Klei Zechuchas are also Chayiv. Klei Zechuchas are also Chayiv, because they're Damu LeMatachas. The other materials are not. As the Gemara says, the Marda is not Chayiv. Rambam, the Rajbar, explicit, Klei Eitz, Klei Cheres, not Chayiv. The Prichadash, it is a little bit unclear what the status of glass is. The Prichadash writes already, Sifka and Gimel, you're not going to find it on the side, but the Prichadash on the side, Prichadash is a very early Achron. Very early Sephardi Achron, I think he lived in the 1600s. When you see, let's say, on this Amud, you have a little bit of Prichadash in the Gilyon of the Shulchan Aruch, that is selections. That's selections of the full Prichadash that they have, a lot of the Shulchan Aruchs have in the back. The full Prichadash. Handily, if you take a look on HebrewBooks.org, the beta version, which has Tur and Shulchan Aruch, Tur Sadaf, also typically has the Prichadash. It's an option there too. So the full Prichadash of Katan Gimel, he points out later, Acharon Kodim, he points out that when the Gemara says that Zechuchas is like Matachas means that Zechuchas is like Matachas Midrabanan. Not min haTorah. He points out, as we discussed in the past, that the Rabban may hold that Tefilas Kelim is b'chol drabanan. Okay, that discussion we had. But Prichash thinks he says he's more convinced by the other Rishonim that the Prichash that Tefilas Kelim is daraisa, but Tefilas Klei Zechuches that is drabanan. He points you to Gemara and Shabbos. It talks about the fact that Klei Zechuches are makabel tuma. Very similar logic, and there the Gemara is clear. Klei Zechuchas are Makabel Tumah Midrabanan. He assumes the same is true here as well. Chachma Sadam also writes this at the very beginning. It's in the Klal Kuf, Klal Ayin Gimel in the Chachma Sadam, where he discusses the Tefilas Kelim. Right up front, he also starts with a summary of the Dinim, and he writes, Chachamim Tiknu Tefilah Klei Zechuchas. He assumes that Tefilas Klei Matchas is Daraisa, but Tefilas Klei Zechuchas is de Rabbana. You could see the history of technology play itself out across the page of Shulchan Aruch. You look in the Pesachei Tshuva in Sif Katan Beis. he talks about zechuches. The Pesach Tshuva quotes the Shelas Yavetz. The Shelas Yavetz that it is Yaakov Emden. Yaakov Emden writes in the Tshuva, Kelim Abonim Medinas Hayam, Shenikroim Porcelain. That's porcelain. The Domino Kaizuchas, they seem very glassy. They seem very similar to glass. They're Abonim Medinas Hayam. They were not being manufactured at that point in Europe, but they were coming probably from the Far East. So what do you do with them? You have to tell them, you have to tell them, the Nikachim and Akum, they're clay suda, and we can get a tea service made out of porcelain, we get a tea cup made out of porcelain. And Tzrichin Tzvila. Tzrichin Tzvila min achal or min ha'adama. Because we know that this is it's a ceramic. It's being made from clay, from soil. Clay matzvah zamor b'parsha. Not metal. I afagav the sheet, even though they're smoother than metal, less lambada, hakwez kucha sheet, glass is also smoother than metal. Gilavishim the chinish, brishan takana lahatiham, the mishumachik, the clay matva shavenu, the hoyachichim tvila. He says the Gemara did say that clay kuchas are chayiv, the clay kuchas are chayiv. Because they're similar to metal insofar as they can be melted down and fixed. The Gemara didn't say they're similar to metal because they have a similar feel to metal. So porcelain also has a texture that's smooth, similar to glass, smoother, as he points out, even than many of their metal kalim. Again, our metalworking technology has improved. He says that that's not the... In other words, he had raised the possibility that I should include porcelain and glass in the fact that glass is an extension of metal, and he says, no, the relevant factor is not how smooth it is, not the texture, the relevant factor is the fixability. The relevant issue is the fixability. The Yad Ephraim discusses this at somewhat greater length. Now, if you look at porcelain, you see it is, if you look carefully at porcelain, there's a glaze on the surface. So offhand, you would say, it's very nice that Pesachei Tshuva Yad Ephraim quote Yaakov Emden, that was makel and porcelain, you don't have to tovel porcelain. What do you do with the shach? Shach and Sivkat and Beis. When the Mechaber talk quotes from the Gemara that you have a ceramic core that's coated in metal and lead. Once upon a time, they used a lead clay suda. Now we know that's a very, very, very unhealthy idea. The Shach says not only coated in lead, mitzubim b'zchuch is also dimkim mitzubim be'ever. Doesn't matter whether it's coated in metal or it's coated in glass. You have a ceramic core; it's coated in glass. Chayv. The glass is on the surface. The glass is touching the food. So that's chayv. Do we have machlokas here? Do we have machlokas here? It comes up all the time. A couple gets married. They get a set of china. You have to tovel the china. And that's a lot of time, a lot of pieces. And the concern of breakage is you have a lot of delicate pieces there. So if you have to tovel, you have to tovel it. If you don't have to tovel it, you should not tovel it. So what's going on? So the answer is that there's no machlokas between the Shach and Rabbi Yaakov Emden. They're not talking about the same case. When you look at porcelain, at china, so it looks as though there's a glaze on it. There is, but not in the sense of mitzvah b'schuchas. If you're interested, you could explore Wikipedia. Has fantastic articles about ceramics. But the kitzur amasa is that there are different subcategories of ceramics, different subcategories of cheres, of items that are made from baking clay, baking mud, baking soil mixed with water. Loosely speaking, they're divided into to earthenware, stoneware, and I believe the third term is porcelain, a subset of which is bone china, which is the china that we talk about having this out of China. It's bone china. The difference is how hot it's fired at. So the Shanun Kadmonius, in antiquity, all they had was earthenware, which has a certain porosity to it. And then, as the technology advances, they're able to use higher and higher heats, so they're able to get the more refined types of charis. So they're able to move from earthenware, sort of like earthenware, old-fashioned charis, is more or less the, let's say you have a terracotta planter, a pot for a plant, that sort of orangish pot for a plant, that's earthenware. Stoneware is ready has more refined feel to it. And porcelain, china, and so forth, which are at even hotter temperatures, I believe over 2,000 degrees centigrade, something of that sort. So that's when you get the china, the porcelain feel. It's not, when you look at it, it does look like there's a very thin layer of glass, but it's not a separate layer of glass that was applied on top of a core of charis. It's not what the Shach is describing, that first you bake a piece of earthenware in the kiln, and then subsequently you apply a layer of glass. There's a process, I believe, it's called vitrification. When you fire charis at that high heat, the process of making charis itself will form a very, very thin layer of a glass-like glaze. But it's not separate apart from the rest of the ceramic. So that's why the vast majority of poskim assume, as the Pesachei Teshuvah and the Yad Ephraim quote from Yaakov Emden, that china and other types of porcelain do not require tefillah scale. It is a kli charis. It's a very refined type of kli charis, but it's a kli charis. It's not a kli zechuchas. It's not what Chazal was talking about. And again, as Yaakov Emden said, not only is the process of making it different, but also the going back to what the Gemara said, the relevant point of similarity between metal and glass is not the smoothness of the texture in the finished product. It's the ability to fix it after it's been broken, which glass shares with metal, but porcelain and china do not. You cannot take and just melt it back down. It does not work. Unlike glass, it does not work. So that's the dominant assumption among poskim, that porcelain, china, and other types of porcelain are not chayiv in tefila, and if they are not chayiv in tefila, not only do you not need to, you should not. You're just asking for loss. It's every once in a while you will. Nowadays you're probably going to find it. It's hard to get some artsy item. Sometimes you can buy. You'll come across a tray that actually has a layer of glass applied to it. So if you have something like that, right, you really have a quarter inch, a half an inch of glass, so then the Shach said that when the Gemara spoke about a coated kli, it's not only coated with metal, the Gemara's example, but coated with glass as well. But china is not included. Yeah.
Two questions. One, is there a reason why the ability for it to break and fix is how we determine whether it's considered like
unhappy? Yes, it's a good question. This brings it back to the Prichadosh with which we began. This is not, he's not saying it's a din daraisa. He's understanding that the whole din of zchuchas the Gemara has is a din drabanan, as is the case by Kabbalah's Tuma. So that's the way. It's not like a din be'etzem. What's the hagdar of matechas? A matechas means it's meltable. There's a din drabanan. Chamei Torah matechas is chayav in tefila. Chazal introduced at some point a din drabanan. People are going to get confused, and they clarified that the reason why is because it's meltable. So if it's not meltable, that's not included in their gzeira. It brings us to the next point in the world of materials. This is our third tonight. How about the next questionable item is plastic. I believe if you go to the Breuer's Mikvah on the other side of the heights, on the instructions, the protocols that are hanging on the wall, they tell you, I believe, they still say that you should tovel plastic without a bracha. That is, I believe, a takana, that's the way Rav Schechter presents it. It was a takana. Takana mi rabbanan kilu. Takana l'migdal milsa that their Breuer's rabbanan made a number of decades ago. It doesn't seem like they held it was required maker adin, Even though some have argued, look, you know, some plastics, there are many different types of plastics. Many different types of plastics. From a texture perspective, from the manufacturing process perspective, I mean, you just know from looking at the recycling codes, and there are many different types of materials that go and fly under the name plastics. Some of them, in theory, could be melted and refixed. Most cannot. But apparently, the Breuer's Rabbanim, I'm not sure if it was Breuer or Schwab, was worried, made a new takana for his kehilos. Rambam points out in the Hagdama to Mishnah Torah, from the Tkuf and the Gaonim and on, the Rambam understands Chazal, the power to make Dina Drabbanan across the board for all of Klal Yisrael, that ended with Chasimas HaTalmud, the Rambam writes, the Hagdama to Mishnah Torah. That's perhaps part of the significance of Ravina Rashi Sofa Ra'a. And he says, Chacham Shebechol Dar are still in power to make takanas for their kehila. They see a need. They have the right to make a takana l'migdar milsam for their kehila. So the Rabbanim of the Breuer's kehila apparently were concerned that plastic was going to take over the world, and that over the next couple of decades, you know, metal and glass would really fall by the wayside. They have become very popular, but Baruch Hashem, other materials have not disappeared. But apparently they were worried, sort of like you have by a fresh challah, the idea of Chazal Masakin, Hafreshes Challah and Challah Chutzlah, or Shalot Tishtaka of Torah's Challah. Apparently the Breuer's Rabbanim were worried about Shalot Tishtaka of Torah's Tfilas Kelim. They wanted, they made a takana that their Baal Batim should tovo plastic. So if that's the case, then their Baal Batim are mechuyev to tovo plastic if their takana is still in place. That does not apply, certainly if you're not a member of the kehila. It is widely assumed that plastic kelim are not chayiv in tefila. And even if you have a plastic, many posts can point out, even if you had a plastic that does lend itself to melt it down, that's not included in the takana. Meaning, it might be the case that if plastic existed, b'tkufas chazal, maybe they would have been misaking Tfilas came on plastic, and maybe not. I don't know. Okay. But even if they would have, well, Mai said they didn't. Greenwald, Shai Greenwald, Shlita, wants to point that to me in this Nusach. If Azal had plastic, perhaps they would have made such a takana, but they didn't have plastic, and they didn't make such a takana. And their takana was on glass. Their takana did not include plastic. So that's maybe a twist on the Yaakov Emden. The last question in terms of materials, spoke about coatings, they spoke about refined ceramics like porcelain in China, spoke about plastic. The last discussion, which you saw already began in the late 1700s, early 1800s, and was renegotiated in the 20th century, that is the question of other metals. Gemara says that matechas, that's the Shulchan Aruch quotes, matchos, metals. The question is, but the pasuk lists, enumerates gold, silver, copper, tin, iron, and lead, which I believe were the only metals that were in use in the ancient Near East. But now we have other metals that were not available at the time, like aluminum, or like titanium. The question is, what's the status? So there, as you saw, the Teres Yisrael, Lifshitz wrote several things, but he's most famous, I think, for his Pirush running commentary in all of Shisha Sidra Mishnah Tveris Yisrael, which is predominantly the numbered comments on the bottom. But he also has these fabulous Hakdamas. I think one of the most famous lines in all the Hakdamas in Tveris Yisrael is this line, Yivakesh Da'as, which is his Hakdama to Tyrus, Os Mem Dalet, he quotes, apparently it's from the Gra, that claim that he's talking in the context of Kabbalah's Tumah. Mateches, Mishnais, and Maseches Kelim tell us at length that Mateches is one of the Mishnais elsewhere also, Chulin and elsewhere, that clay matchos is one of the materials which are Makabal Tumah. There are materials which are not Makabal Tumah. Clay Evan are not Makabal Tumah. Clay Adama, it may have mud that's not really fired, not Makabal Tumah. As you say, clay is chuchis and makabel tumah drabanan, and clay matchos is one of the sorts of Prelim, that's Makabal Tuma Min HaTorah, which are the Kli Matzchos. So the Gra says, the six metals that appear in Chumash. Those six metals. And then Tiferes Yisrael comments, and the parenthesis is, well, I don't think it's just those six, I think it's also, says nowadays, he says, recently, physicists and engineers, chemists have figured out how to isolate other metals from ores that have been mined, and so what's the story with aluminum? He says he thinks it's also Mekabel Tumah. And he talks about being, it could be hammered out, it could be nirka, it's malleable. It's malleable like other metals. Yeah.
The Gra is talking about Tumantara.
He's talking about Tumantara. That's a good point. He's talking about Tumantara. And then Tiferes Yisrael, if you read Tiferes Yisrael carefully, it sounds like he says he's not even 100% sure that the Gra would disagree with him. So it sounds like he's saying the Gra was giving the din the chumash, but maybe the Gra would have understood that other metals somehow fall into these categories. Also, aluminum fits, you know, the same way you have to figure out, not exactly the same, a similar type of issue. You have to figure out, the Torah speaks out various species of non-kosher birds, or kosher animals, so you have to figure out, the Torah speaks of various categories, so how many species fall under those categories? Tiferes Yisrael sounds like he's raising sort of a similar question here. Maybe one of those six terms includes both what they, you know, how we usually translate it, as well as aluminum. So he's not sure. The Gra sounds like he limits it to those six. The Tiferes Yisrael definitely wants to expand it to more. Then Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein renegotiate the issue specifically in the context of Tfilas Kelim. So as you saw, Yaakov Kamenetsky disagrees with the Tiferes Yisrael's take in Tumas in Tuma. Yaakov Kamenetsky thinks this is like Shisha Ksuv Ma'bon Kecha. I think Gemara's din of Shneik's principle in Drushes. Shneik's Ma'bon Kecha Emelamdim. If the Torah wrote the same din in two different contexts, so sometimes that becomes a Tzara Shava when it's relevant. But if it's not, then the Gemara says, look, why the Torah, if I could have derived one from the other, so why did the Torah write the same din in both contexts? It seems superfluous. So the answer is, must be to imply that it only applies in these two contexts and you don't make a Mamatzino. You don't expand it. These aren't just examples of a larger category. These are a comprehensive list. So Yaakov Kamenetsky says, forget about Shnei Ksuvim Ba'al Kecha. It's Shisha Ksuvim Ba'al Kecha. Torah said gold and silver and copper and tin and lead and iron. I say all six. Why not learn one from the other? Or maybe use a general term like Matechas. If that's what some of the posts can discuss. The word Matechas is primarily a word in Lashon HaMishnah, not in Lashon Tanakh. So he thinks, Yaakov Kamenetsky, as you saw, he writes the piece in the appendix of Rutsiko and Sefer Kalim. He thinks we don't expand it. Only those six metals are Mekabel Tumah. So the Torah doesn't use the word Matachah, the Torah gave specific examples. He also, interestingly, he has a fascinating idea, plucked a line in a Rashi in Daf Testament Beis in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. He says, Klei Zechuchas is not Mekabel Tumah min HaTorah, because the only types of matechas that are makabel tumah are the ones that appear in the chumash. Meaning, I could have called glass matechas also. Matechas loshen hatacha, something that gets melted down. This story brings us back in an interesting way to the Pichadash and Yaakov ended. Yeah, I could have spoken about a category of all things which are meltable. But min ha-Torah, that's not what the Torah specified for Kabbalah's Tumah. Glass is not makabel tumah min ha-Torah. Why not? So he said, Yaakov Kamenetsky pointed out, read Rashi carefully. He says because it's not every mateches is mekabel tumah, only the six which are mentioned in the chumash, as opposed to glass, and he argues as opposed to aluminum. So the Gra seems to say that only these six metals are mekabel tumah. The Tzvar Shishral says no, all metals are mekabel tumah. Rav Kamenetsky says only these six metals are mekabel tumah. Rav Moshe, we'll come back to Rav Moshe in a moment. Rav Moshe, no, that's all Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe also, Rav Moshe talks about it in two different places, as you saw. Chayat Gimel and Chayat Beis. He seems like he's a little unsure about it, but it seems like he also thinks like the Gra, but he thinks maybe Midrabanan, aluminum is included. So, continuing along the lines of Yaakov Kamenetsky's Rashi, but taking to the next step, okay, so maybe aluminum isn't Matechas Min HaTorah, but it is Matechas Midrabanan, like glass. Porcelain can't be melted down, but this can. It brings a little bit back to the plastic question. And then Rabbi Yaakov raises the point, Levi, that you were raising, which is Rabbi Yaakov says that he's convinced against the Tzvar Yisrael, with all due respect, is absolutely disagrees with the Tzvar Yisrael, says Rabbi Kamenetsky, aluminum is not makabel tumah, but he says there's room to think about whether Tevilas Kalim is the same as Kalim for Kabbalah's Tumah. So that he already begins to negotiate. Halacha lemasa. It's hard to say definitively that the aluminum is. I would say definitely aluminum is not makabel tumah. It's at the very least, Rabbi Yaakov thought it was not, but Rabbi Moshe thought perhaps it is. Certainly the Tzvar Yisrael thought it is. And even if it's not makabel tumah, maybe it's still metal gabei tefilas kelim, which is an interesting question. It sounds like it should be rooted in the same pasuk. So l'chaora, other metals should be at least at least require tzvila misafik. If you're talking about aluminum, you talk about titanium. There Tzvi Cohen in his Tzvilas Kalim, in the appendix he has that long letter from Yaakov Kamenetsky. In the Gufa Sefer, I think I mentioned earlier, in the Zman, the Paragid Aleph, he goes through well over 100 types of Kalim in alphabetical order. So entry Kuf Mem Beis is Mem for Matechas. So he says all types of metal require tefillah. He thinks with a bracha. There's a long, long footnote. Footnote Kuf Yigimel. He quotes it back and forth. He quotes Rav Elimelech Bluth, who had been in touch with his Rebbe Rav Moshe Feinstein, back and forth. A lot of discussion. So he's actually, Tzvi Cohen is so convinced that it is Chayev, that he's willing to make a bracha. I'm not sure that all poskim would agree to that. But that's the discussion about the third of the three tanaim, which the Gemara mentioned. Many aluminum kalim, and one last point is about materials, should point out, the poskim point out that there are different types of glass. That sometimes you don't always recognize as being glass, but they are glass and require tefillah. So Pyrex looks like glass. It's a particular style of making glass that allows it to be more heat resistant. Poskim say it is a different way of making glass, but still glass requires tefillah. And Corel is glass. Corel is a glass with pigment. Those milchic plates you have at home, those white milchic plates with the blue or green design around the edge, you know what I'm talking about. That's correct. That's not plastic, nor is it porcelain or another ceramic. Corel is a glass that just is made with a suspended pigment. It's a pigmented glass. It's a colored glass. but it's a glass, you can tell when it shatters. You have a drop of corrupt plague, you can tell. It shatters like glass. It is glass. It's this glass that has color at it. So pyrex and karel are glass and absolutely require teal with a bracha. And stainless steel, various types of steel. Steel is an alloyed iron. It's an iron that has other materials blended into it to add strength or to add shine. So those definitely, that's not nichnas into aluminum shine. That is barzel. Barzel is an enhanced barzel. Stainless steel is vadechai with a bracha. But the aluminum is a din and postum. So that wraps up the conversation about the three to nine. Yeah, question.
Yeah, if just going back to the China with the glass coating, if it's true that it would be considered chayv and tefila, I think I saw that Rav Moshe has a different shuva by Kashas where he says that it's not considered significant enough to fit for it to have the blios of Basar B'Chalav in it.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. If we would move from Siman Kuf Chaf to Siman Kuf Chaf Aleph, which we will, Siman Kuf Chaf Aleph is about Hagala scale. The next Seven Ma'arim Kamos, which is mentioned with the final Seven Ma'arim Kamos for Tzilas Kehil, we will take a look at one Sif in Kuf Chaf Aleph, because we'll be looking at the Hilchos Tzilas Kehilim as they come up in Hagala scale. But in the world of Hagala scale in general, yeah, we do differentiate there also between different materials. Because metal, for instance, is nitan to kashrin, as the pasuk says in tzav, and cheres is not. Yeah, so the status of cheres, the status of porcelain, that's what some of the pasuk can point out. That while porcelain is clearly cheres with respect to tevila and therefore potter, yesh la'ayin, whether it's like cheres or like zechuchis, with respect to kashrin. Cheres cannot be kashrin in using normal methods of kashrin. Glass is a big machlokas harishonim. Whether glass is like cheres and cannot be kashered, or it's like metal and it can be kashered, or glass is even better, it doesn't need kashering. It's totally inert and it doesn't absorb anything. It's so little porosity. There are no bleas and no need to kasher. So the post can then have a din about if you see glass as being different than cheres, so where does porcelain fit in? So there we might actually say that... that porcelain is like glass. But again, that's a din daraisa, and that's a physical issue. What's it like? So physically, there are a lot of similar... The quality of the surface does matter. I'm going to say, the concept of tefilas kelim, the texture of the surface is relevant. The concept of hagolas kelim, the texture of the surface may be very relevant, because that may speak a lot to the question of how porous it is. So that's what you start thinking, yeah, Frank, maybe I raised a... That's not necessarily the same issue.
But if it's not able to be bled, then wouldn't it not be considered clay suit for the Rashba's definition of it?
It wouldn't be considered clay matechas.
The Rashba said that clay suit was that in the same...
The Rashba said because the Torah is describing the sort of thing that gets bleas and would need kashri. And by the way, there's notice in the Pri-Chadosh, he quotes the Rashba, and he prefers the Rashba to the Rashi. Rashi just said it's the sort of thing that's used in fire. And the Pri-Chadosh says, since when are the only metal kelim used in fire kelim used for food? So ask a blacksmith. There are plenty of other types of metal kelim used in fire also that are not being used for food. Is that? That's why Pri-Chadosh finds the Rashba more compelling. But again, that's on the level of Daraisa, to define which sort of clay matechas are chai. That's a way, again, of establishing a category of clay suudah. But as the Gemara says, chadashim, which don't actually require tefilas kelim, are still chayav, don't actually require hagala, because they haven't been used yet, still require tefilas kelim. So certainly, the extension to glass, I don't think is going to break down. Even if you were to hold that glass doesn't need tefilah, but midraban, once you have a din daraisa of clay suudah, the Midraban Chazal expands it to the Shulchus also, I think. I had mentioned earlier at the beginning of the Limud that there's a phantom fourth Tanai. So here we come in Sif Alf, not only to the third Tanai, which is Matechas and Shulchus, but the phantom fourth Tanai. What's this phantom fourth Tanai? So one place to get into the conversation would be aluminum, and we'll come back to aluminum in a moment. Another place to get into the conversation is this Knesset HaGedola. and Chachmas Adam. You take a look at both of them are talking about the following issue, which is enormous vats that were used for brewing beer or other manufacturing. So these enormous vats, and they're metal coated. They're tremendous. Which mikveh is large enough to hold them? It depends where you live. So if you live near an ocean, or you live in a city that's on a river, which is kosher l'tefillah, which is up for discussion, maybe we'll get to going forward, Gemara and Dar. So then maybe if you can find the manpower to lug it and get it in the water, and maybe even more importantly, get it out of the water without a crane, maybe that's what to talk about. But if you just have your local mikveh, the local mikveh is way smaller than this vat. So if it's chayiv in tefillah and you can't talk, okay, so then maybe you're stuck. Okay, so don't use it. Or what? Well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? So you already see in the Kiva Eger, and then further in the Pisca Chuv Shem Lechach Mazadam, there are two major approaches. One is, let's reconsider whether it's chayiv or not. And the other is, let's go back and chazer tefillas kelim. Maybe there's a feature that it has because of which it's not chayiv tefillas kelim. The other type of solution is, well, maybe we can somehow fix it. It is chayiv tefillas kelim. Here's the fix. So, for instance, Rukiv Eger quotes a debate. He quotes Achronim who thought that this is something we discussed earlier when we were talking about Klei Sukkah, the definition of Klei Sukkah. So he quotes some Achronim were of the opinion that Klei Sukkah means it's used either for eating food or for making food. If it's just used for storage, so maybe that store, maybe mere storage is not chai. But he points out, the Issur v'Heter says, you're chai. A kelim used for keeping wine, storing wine, are chai. So that is not so clear that that's going to help you. And then he talks about solutions. So the Pisca Tshuva, B'Shem L'Chach Mazadam, so he goes a different route. So he does have a solution. His solution is maybe I should hire a Jewish craftsman to drill such a large hole that it's no longer a kli, and then to fix it. So he gets a... So that's going to solve the problem, because it was a kli, but he's obviously referencing concepts in kli in the context of Kabbalah Tumah, that you have the din based on, in the Mishnayos, based on the Psukim, that Shivrei Kelim lose their, not only Shivrei Kelim, not Kabbalah Tumah, if a kli tame you meshaber it, so it loses its Tumah, and if you put it back together again, at least min HaTorah, the Tumah Yishana does not come back. There may be cases under which there's a discussion, maybe sometimes Midrabban Tumah Yishana comes back, if you have a kli that was nishbar and then you masakin it. But certainly min HaTorah, Parma Chadash is Bavakan. Start again fresh. When you reform, fix the kli, you plug up the hole, it's a fresh start. So Chachmas Adam is quite a similar type of thinking. You'll hire Uman Yisrael to break and fix. So now it's a new Shem Kli, and this Shem Kli never was owned by the Nachri, because it started life 10 minutes ago, an hour ago, a week ago, in the workshop of the Jewish Uman, under your Jewish ownership. So there's no issue. It's not Nikach Menachem. That was the old Kli that was Nikach Menachem, but this is a new story starts here. So that's one solution that Chachma Zadon puts forward. Another solution, he says, but he rejects it. He says, I could have said, it doesn't need, once again, there's those two ways of thinking. Maybe I can find a fix, or maybe it doesn't need Tfilas Kelim, it's somehow pater. Why is it somehow pater? He says, mate, it's so big, and it's built into the ground. So it's mechubar lakarka. Therefore, it doesn't require a Tfilas Kelim. See, he doesn't like that. The Pitzchay Tshuva does his job of just giving you a very brief, fantastically functional and yet brief summary. If you look in the actual Chachos Adam, it's in Kalayin Gimel, is Hilchos Tfilas Kelim. It's in Os Yigimel, and there's a long, long footnote in the Binas Adam, which he refers to as his tshuva. Says, I was marach in the tshuva. A long footnote. The Binas Adam is the Chachmas Adam's own, sort of like a Be'er Halacha that he wrote on his Chachmas Adam. So he talks at length. He says, in the Halachas of Tfilas Kelim, usually the rule is Tal Lashem Asof Chibro is Mekabel Tumah. That comes up also in the context of Mikvah for She'uvim. If you have a kli that was originally a kli and then you attach it to the ground, it retains its status as a kli. A status as a kli with respect to mikvahs, a status kli with respect to kelim. So this is going on here. They built, whatever, wherever they produced this massive vat in the factory, and then they shipped it to your location, and someone built it into the ground. The Tal Shasav Chibro retains its status as a kli. Now what you see from all this, you see from all this. Now, Rabbi Kineger was, why Rabbi Kineger, how was he trying to get us off the hook here? By referencing one of the Tanakh, one of the three Tanakh, specifically, Lekuchim Nakam. He said, Rabbi Kineger was referencing, maybe I get us off the hook because it's not clay suda, because it's used for storage. It doesn't really help so much if you're brewing. Chachmas Adam had said maybe you can get us off the hook by getting rid of the Lekuchim and Akum because I'll break and fix and now it's a new kli. But the other argument that, well, it's Mechubar Lekarka. So he ultimately says, well, it's not really Mechubar Lekarka because you see from Kabbalah's Tumah that Mechubar Lekarka is only if it was Mechubar Mirosh. But if it is originally a separate kli, Tolosh, originally a separate kli that was not attached to Vulsav Chibro, and then you subsequently cemented it in, it does not lose its status as a clear respect to Tumah. But what was the Havamina? That it will be Pater, why? Because it's not Klei Suda? Because it's not Klei Matechas? Because it's not Nikah Menachem? No, it is all of those. Why would it not be required to scale? Because even though it's used for Suda, it has the right function, it has the right material, metal coated, it has the right history, it used to belong to Nachri, now belongs to you. What is missing is the phantom fourth condition, or if you're a mathematician, you might say the zero condition. Before math textbooks, especially graduate level textbooks, often, you'll have a chapter one, chapter two. You don't have to be a math book that chapter one, chapter two. If you have subsections, so the subsection of chapter one will be 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, and subsection of chapter two, 2.1, 2.2, 2.3. The some math books, the introduction will be referred to as chapter 0. And the sections of the introduction are 0.1, 0.2, 0.3. Sort of like in Eretz Yisrael, right, where the first floor is the floor above what we call the second floor. And the ground floor is not the first floor. That's Kuf, Komat Karka, or floor number 0. So what do I refer to as a zeroth condition? The conditions that go ahead is it has to be a kli which says a tashmish suit, it has to be a kli which is made out of metal or glass, it has to be a kli which has a history of nikach menachem. But before all of that, it has to be a kli. And that's the phantom fourth or zeroth condition. It has to be a kli. That's what the Chacham Zanim is arguing. I could have said it's pater because it's mechubar lakarka, and therefore what? And therefore, it's still made of mateches, it's still used for suda, it still has a ownership, the right ownership history, but it's not a kli. It's not a kli at all. It's karka. And the only reason why he rejected that is because this doesn't fit the parameters of mechubar lakarka. But this is tal shel chibro, so you see from tuma the tahara that this still has the status of a kli. And by the way, that very tsushtel, the fact that we're looking to tuma vatara, which has already come up earlier, and we're looking to Tumah Vatara for guidance in terms of how to define things. Already making you the sense of how to define a kli. What's a kli? What's a kli? So that's the most fundamental tenai of all, is it a kli? And this comes up in a number of different ways. And it comes up in a number of different tshuvas of Moshe Feinstein, where really what he's discussing is this a kli? Various qualities, do various qualities render it, although it's metal, and although it's used for Suda, and although it's nikach min ha'akum, it may be potter because it's not a kli, and his rayas tend to be from the world of Taurus. He talks about Shuv in Chelek Gimel, Simen Chaf Gimel. It's right after, immediately after one of the Shuvas about aluminum. The aluminum one was Chelek Gimel Simen Chaf Beis. Chelek Gimel Simen Chaf Gimel in Yerodeir, Moshe talks about a kli that is temporary, a temporary kli. And the whole handle about what's the status, Mishnayis, Tosefta's, and Rambam's, and Hilchas Kalim, what's the status, can I find models for Kalim that fall apart after a couple of uses? And are they Makabal Tumah or not? He talks about, the Tanan talk about, if you have, it gets involved in Gersos, if you have a Kli that was made out of a dried out rind. Sometimes you go to some caterers like to a more elegant presentation of watermelon, instead of just having slices of watermelon, you carve out all the flesh of the watermelon, turn it into balls, and then use the watermelon itself, sort of make like a basket, a shaped basket out of part of the watermelon rind, and you refill it with more watermelon balls. So what's the status of that watermelon rind? Clay eights are makabel tumah. Is that, forget about tefillas kalim for a moment, clay eights don't require tefillas kalim, but they're makabel tumah. What's the status of the water? I made a basket out of a watermelon rind. It's eights, and it has a base kibul. Is it makabel tumah or not? So, but the rind is not ochel. Mamash is just the rind. The rind is the watermelon balls are, and that'll be uksin shaila. Once if the rind is attached, you have a slice of watermelon with the rind attached, so that might be a yag. That's Mesechus Uksin. But now I carved out all the edible part. All that's left is just the green and the white. It's not edible. It's not an ochel. It's not a yad or a shomer. It's an ochel. But it's a kli. Or is it? So that he gets involved deep into Handel, Mishnayos, Toseftos, Rambams, and he wants to demonstrate, what he comes out with is, if it's the sort of thing that's going to wither away after a couple of uses, They talk about delas, which is not the same as a watermelon, but pretty similar. You have a container made out of a rind of some fruit or vegetable that will last a couple of uses, and then it's just going to fall, it'll rot, it'll dissolve, it's going to fall apart after a couple of uses. So that's what Rav Moshe comes out with, is the sort of kli that will fall apart after a couple of uses is not a kli. Not a kli for Kabbalah's Tumah, and he assumes, therefore, is not a kli with respect to Tefillas Kalim either. So obviously, again, in the context of Tefillas Kalim, you know, watermelon rinds are clearly don't require Tefillas Kalim because they're neither metal nor glass. But the Shaila Rav Moshe raises is, how about if I have a kli of a different sort? Now, what's interesting, a metal or glass kli. Now, how would this come up? So it might come up if, let's say, you have some sort of artsy fruit bowl, some sort of artsy candy dish that's made out of segments of metal or glass that are glued together with a water-soluble glue. Water-soluble glue isn't necessarily what you would usually use when you're making food-grade items, because it means you can't really wash it. Okay? Let's say it's not meant to get wet. It's a piece you might display, or you might use for candy, something like that. Not really. If you need to, you'll clean it with a moist cloth. If you don't really plan to get it wet. If you put it in the mikveh, it's going to fall apart. I apologize. I raised that prematurely. I'm sorry. We'll get back to that situation in a moment. Now we're talking about Now we're talking about, I have a kli that doesn't last. A kli, let's say, that is glued together, and the glue is going to come apart, and it's fine. It's a disposable kli. A disposable kli. So what's the status of a disposable kli? So he said, look, a disposable kli is not a kli. Disposable kli is not a kli. That's how they quote Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's important, though, to look at that. So that's an example. Again, Rav Moshe's tshuva is an example of one of the hagdaras of a kli is it has to be yachal hiskayim. That's the way he understands the issue with the delas. If it can't last more than two or three uses, it doesn't have a shem kli. It is, however, important to point out that if you read to the end of the tshuva, Rav Moshe seems to say, I thought clearly, that's if it's unable to last more than two or three uses. It's the sort of kli that in two or three uses, after two or three uses, it just comes apart. It's no longer usable. But I thought he says pretty clearly, if it's a sort of kli that can last the own vod, but people, it's inexpensive, and people value their time more than their money, and they just throw it out because we live in a disposable society. But Moshe does not seem to say that's not a kli. The fact that I plan to throw it after a couple of times doesn't remove the shame kli. If it can't last more than a couple of times, then it does lose the shame kli. This comes up the most in the context of aluminum pans. People buy aluminum pans for the convenience of I can use it and toss it. I don't have to worry about washing it. The question is, you don't have to worry about washing it afterwards because you can throw it out. But do you have to take care of toveling it in advance? So there are many poskim, I think there are poskim who assume that since it's meant to be disposed of, it doesn't have a shame. Number one, there is a din about whether aluminum requires tefillah or not. Again, we saw Tzvi Kohn assumes mamash requires tefillah with a bracha. That's already a leap. But it may well require tefillah. Again, according to Moshe Feinstein, it might be included in the din rabbanu zchuchus. According to the Tzaris Yisrael, it's probably included in the then the rice of Klei Machas, that Kamensky is not so sure it should be chayav. So the question is, how about if it's a disposable aluminum pan? I would be willing to tovel an aluminum or titanium pan that's meant to be reused. But let's say it's disposable. So some point to this tshuva of Moshe and say, look, it's disposable, so it doesn't require a tefillah. The problem is, there are posts who say that. If it's disposable, don't worry about it. But the question is it just I choose to throw it out, or it really can't last? Ramesh's standards in the tshuva seems to be not just that I choose to throw it out, but I need to throw it out. Maybe not after one use, but he says, if after two or three uses, I think my father-in-law does advocate for tovaling aluminum pans. I think there's an important chiluk to be made, I believe. I would suggest there's an important chiluk to be made in terms of between different types of aluminum pans, in terms of what they're made, what function they have. Different shapes and sizes are meant for different things. So let's say the loaf pans are used for making challahs. Again, many people prefer to throw them out rather than washing them. But if they're of a reasonable thickness, then they could handle washing again and again and again. Again, if they're thin enough, so then they won't within two or three uses, I assume includes using and washing. If within two or three uses and washings it's misshapen or it's popping holes, so then Rav Moshe would say that's not chayiv and tefillah. Let's say if you have a rectangular pan that's made for pies or kugels, unless they're particularly thick, they tend to spring a hole after a use or two of cutting. Cutting, the knife tends to pop through. So again, if in the course of normal use, it's not going to last more than two or three uses. So that's like the loss. It doesn't have a shame clean, therefore it's not chayv and tefillah kalim. If it's a sort of pan, the shape that drives a certain function and the thickness it can be used repeatedly and washed repeatedly and would last. So then, again, there are those who would say it doesn't require tefillah because it's aluminum. There are those who say it doesn't require tefillah because I choose to dispose of it. Rav Moshe Feinstein does not seem to have accepted either, I don't think, has accepted either of those angles. So that's why there is a market for aluminum pans with a hashgacha. That's embossed in them. That I believe what the hashgacha means is that they are, some organization is ensuring that this aluminum pan was made under Jewish ownership. And therefore, it's although it's a kli suda, although it may be a kli, and a kli suda, and a kli mazeches, but it's not nikah menachem, because they bought the raw material from the nachri, and it was made into a pan of Jewish auspices, and therefore there's no, the shaila doesn't come up. So that's one aspect of the gedra of a, to be a kli means it's yachol lehiskayim, but again, the fact that I'm in a road to lekaimo might not be the same. And another angle, Rav Moshe has a tshuva with which some disagree. Chibach and Chayelot Beis, Simon Mem, where he argues that if you want, this is something that used to be more popular than nowadays, if you buy a jar of applesauce or a jar of tomato sauce or a can of ground coffee, and then you want to reuse it. I want to wash it out, and I'll reuse it for whatever. I'm going to store pickles in it. Right. We'll use it for something else.
For coffee.
So, right. Okay. And we'll refill it. Right. So with the rise of cheap disposable / reusable plastic containers, so that I think is part of why reusing glass jars is not as popular as it used to be. Okay. But Ramesh has a shayla, so I reuse the jar. Reuse the jar, so do I have to tovel it? I bought a jar of applesauce. I finished the applesauce. Now I wash it for something else. I have to take it to the mikveh first. But yeah, I bought this glass jar from the non-Jewish company, and it's going to use it for food. Mamash klei suda. So he argues, Simon Mem, weiter, it's not, more or less from a kleeper, it's not a kli. He has two arguments. His primary argument is that it's tafel. He has fascinating raya from Meiser Sheni, such a Rav Moshe move. There's a raya from Meiser Sheni. Fascinating. You have kesef Meiser Sheni, you pull the Meiser Sheni onto money, you have to bring the money to Yerushalayim, you buy food Yerushalayim with that money, and then you eat the Kedusha's Meiser Sheni in B'tahara in Yerushalayim. So when I use the Moos Meiser Sheni, the Mishnah talks about if I could use the money to buy food in a container, even though l'chora part of the money is going for the container. So I can only use the Meiser Sheni money for food. I can't use the Meiser Sheni money to buy a fork and knife with which to eat the food. But, Moshe points out, but the, if I to buy food in a container, even though a couple of pennies are going for the container, not a problem because it's tafel to the food. So he argues, such a fascinating argument, that maybe I should say that here as well. It's not a kli. They're selling me applesauce. They're selling me pickles. They're not selling me jars. They're not in the jar business. They're selling pickles. The jar is just tuffle to the pickles. And then he has a somewhat similar, not identical, argument from Chosalos, from the sugya of opening packages on Shabbos. You see that sometimes the container that's holding food isn't, that container is not a kli gumwer. So maybe that's why if you're more makel in terms of opening the package that has the food in it. You see, it's not a kli gumwer. So not everyone agrees with Rav Moshe. I think many disagree with Rav Moshe. It doesn't mean it's not a kli. It became a kli under Jewish auspices. When you decide to use it, now it's a kli. I only got a shame kli after it belongs to the Jew. It's true, it's tafel to the food when you buy it. You're spending money on a jar of pickles, so the fact that a few cents are going to the pickles, overall, this kenia is a kenia of food. But it doesn't mean it doesn't have a shame kli. What would Moshe say that if you have a glass jar and it's tamei, and then it became tamei in the factory, and then they filled it with pickles, so now it lost the shame kli and it's no longer tamei? It's hard to say. That's a difficult argument. But many are uncomfortable with the argument that because you bought, they were just they're in the pickle business, not in the jar business. Therefore, it doesn't have a shame kli. That's Shulam Moshe is debated. My father-in-law is famous for pointing out that he thought not only when you reuse it, even use it the first time. The fact that they stacked it with pickles, I don't have to pour all the pickles out as soon as I buy it. That was the hishtamshus of the manufacturer to fill it with pickles. But if I'm going to eat it, and the fact that I continue to leave it in storage, that's just a hemshech of the hishtamshus of the nachrit. So I'm not, even if you disagree with Ramesha, my father points out, you're not going to empty the jar the moment you buy it, tovel it, and then put tomato sauce back in. Kozman, that's full, you can leave it full. The fact that it was filled with food, that's the nachrit's hishtamshus. But Schechter argues, but to eat or drink out of that kli, that already is my new hishtamshus. That's why he would advocate not drinking out of that. It's no longer as relevant as it used to be. Back in the days when Snapple came in glass bottles, and they were very proud of their glass bottles. So Shaila was, can you drink out of the glass? Can I stick a straw and drink out of the glass bottles? So according to Ramesha, sure, it's not a, you can even reuse the glass bottles without tefillah. If you disagree with Ramesha, so then the question is, how about to eat or drink out of the bottles? Schechter would argue that, again, to continue to store things in the kli is fine, but to choose to eat or drink out of the kli, to use it as a plate or a cup, that already is a problem. It doesn't matter if you stick a straw in it or drink it out of the bottle. Either way, you'd be mishtamish as tashmer suda. So if one wants to adopt the chumrah, then you would either buy a plastic bottle or get yourself a plastic cup, or whatever, get yourself a cup, pour it into a cup, or enjoy drinking out of glass bottles in Eretz Yisrael, where I believe the bottles are, predominantly manufactured in Israeli companies. Finally.
Yeah. What about aren't all soda cans made out of metal?
Yeah, so often it's the same, it's really the same issue. There is, I think, another argument to be made to make on drinking out of the soda can, which is, There is what to Yesh La'ayin, it comes up in Hilchos Shabbos, that to the extent that you wouldn't open a soda can on Shabbos, then you have to think about, maybe there is a stronger argument to make that am I creating the kli now? Now, that's not 100% clear either. It's not clear that I'm creating the kli as much as I'm creating a Pesach. And maybe it was a kli before. It was a metal kli, aluminum kli, that was holding soda. The concern with opening the can is probably not that I'm making a kli as much as that I'm creating a beautiful Pesach.
The top part's not a kli.
The top part's not a kli.
The way they make a thing is they put the top on.
Okay, therefore.
So the bottom can be used as a storage. The top, they just open the top, but you bring the top part, not out of the kli.
Number one, I'm not sure. It was originally made that way, but now it's functioning as a single kli. We'll get to that, though, more in a moment. And number two, it's kli suda even if it doesn't touch my mouth. In other words, I can't drink out of a glass cup even using a straw unless the glass cup was tumble. I can't eat off of to have soup in a bowl, even though I'm not putting my lips to the bowl. I'm using the spoon to eat out of the bowl, but that's still a hishtamshus. If it's a Corel bowl or a glass bowl, some other glass bowl, metal bowl, it does require your tefillah. Oh, wow. Let's finally close with this. He spoke about this idea, the zeroth tanai. There has to be a kli. That Rav Moshe suggests being a kli might mean that it's Yochel Heskayim. Being a kli might mean that it's sold independently as opposed to just as an accessory to the food, Yesh La'ayin. And so the Chachos Adar already is the issue of Mechuber Lakarka. So that Mechuber Lakarka comes up in an interesting context, Bizman Hazeh, which is what do you do with electronic kelim? And we'll close the whole discussion of the Tanai HaKli with the electronic kelim. What do you do with the George Foreman? What do you do if Moshe talks about a toaster? He doesn't mean toaster oven, he means a toaster. Okay, the old school, you put, it had two slots on top and you put in slices of bread and when it's done, it dings and the bread pops up and it's all toasted and ready to go. So what do you do with electric or electronic kelim? They are not supposed to be immersed. State on the side, do not immerse in water. Why do they say do not immerse in water? Even though some of them you are allowed, to, some of them do get wet, are meant to get wet, to be dripped upon, but when a little bit of water drips on it, that's fine. But when it's immersed in water, then the water pressure will force the water, push the water deep, deep into the innards of the kli, where it's going to get to the electric or electronic components inside. And the concern is that the moisture stays there, even if you let it dry for a while, the moisture may stay there, and the next time you use it, or a few times down the line, sooner or later, you're going to be using it, and the water is going to create a short circuit, which may either just kill the kli, or might start a fire. So the question is, so what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? So Rav Moshe raises this. I should have put this too in the Maamar Kamos also. Rav Moshe raises this in the context of the old-fashioned urns that had like the black plastic bottom and the silvery housing for the water. So for that type of urn, he says it's chayiv, and here's the solution. He has once again arrived from Tyrus, I believe from Zavin, or from Tfulyom, that he says, you can have a situation where you have two separate kelim. We may have discussed a couple weeks ago. Sometimes you can have two kelim that are connected to each other, but of course they have separate functions as the status of two kelim. I think the Tanam talk about what we would call like a silverware drawer. You have like a single piece of plastic or wood or whatever with separate pockets for knives and spoons and forks. It's all one single item that hangs together. But the Tanaim say, Rashi quotes, that if a Adam Tamei touches one, the knife section, only that section becomes Tamei. The other sections don't because it's separate kelim. They are connected together because each one has its own function. So Rashi says the old-fashioned urns also. There's two separate kelim. They are connected. The metal part on top is the pot that holds the water, and the black plastic housing with the orange light on the bottom, that's that houses the element that provides the heat. So we understand why they're connected together, but they're two separate kelim with two different functions. And he says, as such, the metal kli is chayiv in tefillah because that comes in direct contact with the water. The housing, the element underneath, is not like the dreifos. So he says, here's what you do. Turn it upside down and tovel just the metal part. You open the faucet, leave the faucet open, so then you can tovel the metal part and leave the plastic housing out of the mikveh. The problem is that does not work on a George Foreman, which typically does not open 180 degrees. If they did, you would have the same solution because the white housing would be not chayiv in tefillah. The black metal surface is chayiv in tefillah. You can open 180 degrees, stick it in carefully, and you're good. The problem is they typically do not open 180 degrees, and the issue comes up with other sorts of electronic kelim too. So there are different approaches. Some argue for the puncture and fix, or buy it only from a Yisrael. Rav Shechter assumes that there is no Chiyuv Tefillas Kelim in this case, and this takes us back to the language of the Rambam and that Rav Yeh quoted by the Hagos Maimini, that Tefillas Kelim is not primarily an Isser. Tefillas Kelim, as the Rambam puts it, there's a Chiyuv, Me'atar Midrabanan, a Chiyuv to be tovel and then use. That's the mitzvah. And it's true that the Rambam and most other Rishonim assume that you're not allowed to use the kli before you tovel it. Shvi Cohen has a footnote early in the Sefer where he points out that there are some Rishonim whom he thinks, oh, it's a mitzvah Tefillas Kelim, but you can use it beforehand also if you want to. We don't accept that. We assume like the Rambam, and he points out most Rishonim, many Rishonim, right, like the Rambam. It's usher to use the kli before tefillah, but that's because it's a bitzel ha-mitzvah. because the mitzvah is to use, to tovel and then use. So to use first is a partial bita mitzvah. You still have the chiyuv now to tovel before the next use. But it starts as a mitzvah. Again, they had the Rav Yah in the Hagos Maimon, he had said that as well. So therefore, Rav Shachter argues, if you have a kli which once you tovel it, you cannot use it. Let's say you had, like I was saying before, so I jumped the gun before. You have a kli that's held together, segments are held together with water-soluble glue. So they manufactured it for uses that, well, basically just with dry food, you're just going to wipe it down with a clean cloth. Okay. A candy dish, whatever. A fruit bowl. But you, which is fine, it's functional. The problem is, but you're a Jew and you bought it from a nachri. So now it requires tefillas kelim because it's a glass or metal segments that are glued together. But if you total it, the whole thing falls apart. So my father argues, well, in that case, there's no issue because tefillas kelim is to the mitzvah is to total and use. If you can't total and use, then there's no need to total. Then there is no mitzvah, and you have no choice. That's all I was talking about. It's like using plastic or wood. There's no mitzvah, just use it. So that's what he argues here also, that if it's a kli which you would not use once you toveled it, so then you can use it without tefillah. So I spoke to a couple of, over the years, to a couple of electrical engineers, and some held, if you leave it to dry long enough, it's totally fine, and others said they would not do that. So personally, midei safek lo yatzanu, I would not want to use an electronic kli that had been totaled and left to dry. Arbazai, so then you have the right to use it without tefillah. And the fascinating postscript, Neuberger Tain is that once you're doing this, so the next time it snows, you should total it in the snow. We'll talk about that more next time. We do not rely on tefillah b'sheleg, but there are Rishonim who held that you can total in snow. They said we wouldn't normally total in snow because most Rishonim hold it doesn't work. But here, you have two options. Don't total at all or total in snow. Because it's not melted, there's no concern of the water pressure, you know, shunting it in. There's going to be a little bit of moisture on the surface, and you'll dry it off. So this, again, wraps up our discussion of the Tanaim, the Kli. And we're now going to jump into the second half, which will be shorter, of the dinim. The beginning and the end of the siman deals with the ofen hatfila. What sort of bodies of war you can tovel in, how you make a bracha, who can tovel, how you hold it, v'chulu v'chulu, how it interacts with the Haggadah. The Maamar Kamos are here. These Maamar Kamos will probably take us 2 or 3 weeks. There's a lot packed in here.